The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Croner from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with the Reader's Digest. Drama in real life. A war dog comes home. On the front lines in Afghanistan, Dingo, and it's spelled D-Y-N-G-O, was a hero. But retirement for the canine veteran would not come easily. And there's a picture of a gray-faced brown dog. Looks like it's either a Malamute or a German Shepherd type. It was late. An indistinguishable, bleary-eyed hour to the front was a large dog, snapping his jaw so hard that his teeth give a loud click with each bark. His eyes were locked on me, desperate for the toy I was holding. But he wasn't playing. He was freaking out. As I cautiously held my ground, his bark morphed from a yelp to a shout. Then it gave a rumbling growl. That was when my trepidation gave way to something more primal, fear. This was no ordinary dog. Dingo, a 10-year-old Belgian Malinois, had been trained to propel his 87-pound body towards insurgents, locking his jaws around them. He served 3 tours in Afghanistan, weathering grenade blasts and firefights. This dog had saved thousands of lives. Now I was in my apartment in Washington, D.C. Just 72 hours earlier, I had traveled across the country to retrieve Dingo from Luke Air Force Base in Phoenix so he could live out his remaining years with me in civilian retirement. And this is by Rebecca Frankel. The first Arizona night, Dingo sat on my hotel bed waiting for me. When I got under the covers, he stretched across the blanket, his weight heavy and comforting against my side. As I drifted off to sleep, I felt his body twitch, and I smiled. Dingo is a dog who dreams. The next morning, I gave him a toy and went to shower. When I emerged from the bathroom, it was like stepping into a henhouse massacre. Feathers floated in the air, fresh rips ran through the white sheets. In the middle of the bed was Dingo, panting over a pile of shredded pillows. Throughout the morning, his rough play left scratches where teeth had broken the skin through my jeans. On the flight home, Dingo was allowed to sit at my feet in the roomy first row, but he soon had bouts of vomiting in between his attempts to shred the Harry Potter blanket I'd bought. The pilot announced Dingo's military status, inspiring applause from the whole cabin. When we reached my apartment, we both collapsed from exhaustion. It would be our last bit of shared peace for many months. I met Dingo in 2012 at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio. I was working on a book, War Dogs, Tales of Canine Heroism, History and Love, and had heard about how Dingo had saved many lives in Afghanistan. His bravery has earned his handle, Staff Sergeant Justin Kitts, a Bronze Star. In 2011, Kitts and Dingo boarded a helicopter on their way to a remote outpost in Afghanistan. Dingo wore a wide choke chain and a vest that said MWD Police K-9 to indicate that he was a military working dog. The plan for the day was familiar. The platoon from the U.S. Army's 101st Airborne Division would make its way on foot to nearby villages, connecting with community elders to find out whether Taliban operatives were planning improvised explosive devices, IEDs, in the area. Kitts and Dingo walked in front to clear the road ahead. After 6 months of these scouting missions, Kitts trusted Dingo would keep him safe. They were in a grape field, a little more than a mile outside the outpost, when Dingo's ears perked up. His tail stiffened, and his sniffing intensified. It wasn't a full alert, but Kitts knew Dingo well enough to know he'd picked up the odor of an IED. He signaled his platoon leader. "There's something over there, or there's not," Kitts said. "But my dog is showing me enough. We should not continue going that way." The rest of the soldiers took cover while Kitts walked Dingo to the other end of the path to secure a route. They'd gone barely 300 yards when Kitts saw Dingo's nose start to work faster. His ears perked and his tail stopped. He was on odor again. If Dingo was right, there were 2 bombs, one obstructing each path out of the field. They were trapped. Then the gunfire started. Kitts grabbed Dingo and pulled him down to the ground, his back against a mud wall. The next thing Kitts heard was a whistling sound, high and fast, flying past them at close range, just feet from where they were sitting. An explosion shook the ground. Dingo whimpered and whined, his thick tail tucked between his legs. The grenade explosion had registered much deeper and louder to his canine ears. Knowing he had to distract them, Kitts grabbed a twig, and the dog and handler engaged in a manic tug of war until Dingo relaxed. Then Kitts dropped the branch and turned to fire over the wall. It turned out Dingo's nose had been spot on. There were IEDs buried on both places. The insurgents had planned to box the unit into the grape field and attack them there. Altogether, during their 9 months in Afghanistan, Kits and Dingo spent more than 1,000 hours patrolling. They discovered more than 370 pounds of explosives. The military credited them with keeping more than 30,000 U.S. and Afghanistan and coalition forces safe. The United States has deployed thousands of dogs in combat zones. Depending on the war, their tours have lasted months to years. When it's time for war dogs to retire, the law specifies that they should be released into the care of their former handlers, if possible. The second option is law enforcement agencies, and the third is other persons capable of humanely caring for these dogs. According to Douglas Miller, the former manager of the DOD Working Dog Program, retired war dogs are in higher demand than they were a decade ago. When I first took this job in 2009, there were about 150 people maybe on the list, he said. That list has now grown to about 1,200 or more people. But not every civilian anticipates the adjustments the dog will have to make. When we met, Kits told me he'd always hoped he could bring Dingo home, but his oldest daughter was allergic to dogs. He commented he was impressed with how much Dingo, usually stoic around new people, seemed to take me. When he laid his head in my lap, I felt the tug of love. Kits asked whether I would consider taking Dingo when he was set to retire. For me, adopting Dingo would mean adopting a new schedule, responsibilities, and costs, including moving to a larger, more expensive, dog-friendly apartment. The list of reasons to say no was inarguably long. Even so, over time, that little feeling tugged harder. I weighed all the pros and cons, and then discarded the cons. On May 9, 2016, I was on a plane to Phoenix. And there's a picture of the author. She looks like a rather slight lady, long black hair, rather attractive, kind of an olive skin type skin. And there's a picture of the dog. She's squatting, and the dog is standing next to me. The dog's almost as tall as she is when she's squatting. You sound scared. I'd called Kits as soon as I heard the Dingo growl. He counseled me through the first night, intuiting that what Dingo needed was to feel safe was a crate. My friend Claire had a spare one and helped me put it together. We barely put the door in place before Dingo launched himself inside, his relief palpable and pitiable. The next day, during the test rest of the first week, I had one objective, to wear Dingo out. I chose the most arduous walking routes, the steepest leaf-laden trails. The pace was punishing. Other challenges presented themselves. Dingo had arrived with scabs and open sores on his underbelly. Tests revealed a bacterial infection that required antibiotics and medicated shampoo baths. Since I could not lift Dingo into the bathtub, I would shut both of us into the small bathroom and do the best I could with a bucket and washcloth, leaving inches of water and dog hair on the floor. Then there was Dingo's nearly uncontrollable drive for toys, or anything resembling a toy. Instilled in him by the rewards he received during his training, the urge sent him after every ball, stuffed animal, or abandoned glove we passed. The distant echo of a basketball bouncing filled me with dread. My desperation grew when Dingo began to twist himself like a pretzel to clamp down on the fur and flesh above his hind leg, gripping himself in rhythmic bites, a compulsion known as flank sucking. Struggling for order, I set up a rigid Groundhog Day-like routine. Each day we'd wake at the same hour, eat meals at the same hour, travel the same walking paths, and sit in the same spot on the floor together after every meal. I don't remember when I started to sing to him, but under the street lamps on a late-night walks, I began a quiet serenade of verses from Simon and Garfunkel or Peter, Paul, and Mary. I have no idea whether anyone ever heard me. In my mind, there was only this dog and my need to calm him. One night that summer, with the D.C. heat at its most oppressive, I called my father and told him things weren't getting better. "Give it time," he said. "You'll end up loving each other. You'll see." When Dingo would pull away from me, straining against my hold on the leash, I found that hard to believe. Sometimes, when Dingo stared at me from behind the bars of his borrowed crate, I wondered whether he was thinking back to his days of leaping out of helicopters. Did he miss the sound of gunfire? Did he crave the adrenaline crash of hopping over the walls and the struggle of human limbs between his teeth? What if, in my attempts to offer him a little love and relaxation, I had stolen his sense of purpose? Military dogs get to a point where they're living for their jobs. And just as a human service members do, says Matt Hattal, a former Marine handler who was deployed to Afghanistan. That has been their identity. That is it for years and years. And when you get out, you kind of go, what the heck do I do now? And you can never really find that replacement. That dog's been through situations you're not going to be able to understand and might not be able to handle, Natalis continues. He acknowledged that things weren't always easier after he brought home Cheney, his former canine partner. The black lab was still ready to work, but there wasn't any work to do. Cheney developed a fear of thunderstorms, which is strange, Atala says, because he had never before been scared of thunder or even gunfire or bombs. Among the former handlers who'd worked with Dingo was Staff Sergeant Jesse Keller, who had arranged the adoption. As Dingo and I struggled to adapt to our new life, Keller offered me the same thoughtful suggestions, but something changed when Keller sent me a text message. If you don't feel you can keep him, please let me know and I will take him back. In some ways, this was the thing I most wanted to hear, but a resolve took hold. I was not going to give up this dog. During our early months together, Dingo admirably maintained his military duties. As we made our way down the hall from my apartment, he would drop his nose down to the seam of the door we passed and give it a swift but thorough sniff. He was still hunting for bombs. Every time I clipped on his leash, he was ready to do his job. Even if in his mind, I wasn't ready to do mine. He turned his face up, expectant and chiding. And when I didn't give a command, he would carry on, picking up my slack. I tried to navigate him away from the line of cars parked along the leafy streets, where he tried to set his nose toward the curves of the tires. How could I convey to him that there were no bombs here? How could I make him understand that his nose was now entirely his own? Over the next 9 months or so, Dingo gradually learned to let his guard down and settle into domesticity, and I adjusted to life with a retired war dog. It has now been more than 3 years since I brought Dingo home. He has learned how to play, maybe for the first time without anxiety. The borrowed crate was dismantled 2 years ago. His flank sucking has all but disappeared. All the rugs lie in place. The couch cushions and pillows sit idle and unthreatened. Dingo and I are rarely more than a few feet apart. He follows me around. My lumbering guardian, he is now truly my dog. Every once in a while, as I run my thumb along the velvety inside of his left ear, I see the faint blue eye of his ID tattoo, L-606. He exhales a low grumble, but it's one of the deep of contentment. I can take Dingo out without any worry now. He is gentle with dogs who are smaller and frailer than he is. He has even befriended a feisty black cat. Dingo's years of rough-and-tumble life are finally catching up with him. He stands at attention, ears have fallen into a crumple. The marmalade brown of his muzzle is swept with swirls of white and gray. He is missing more than a few teeth and walks with a bit of a limp. And there's a picture of him outside her apartment building with a small white dog and Dingo standing next to him, and Dingo looks tired. In early 2018, Dingo and I drove up to my parents' home in Connecticut. It was an unusually balmy day in February, and we rode with the windows down, Dingo's head raised into the slanting sun. He made friends with the neighbor's dogs, dragged branches across the muddy yard, and took long evening walks with my father on the downy snow. Back home again, when we pulled into our building's circular driveway after 2 weeks away, I looked on as he jumped down onto the concrete. His face changed as he reoriented himself to the surroundings, finding his footing along the uneven sidewalk and making a beeline toward his favorite tree spot. We entered my apartment. He nosed his way inside, then pranced back and forth between his bed and bowls. He danced toward me, his eyes filled to the brim with an expression that required no interpretation. We're home. We're home. All in a day's work. This is all in a day's work. Actor Megan Fox had just one job growing up. I worked at a smoothie cafe. I used to have to drip as a banana. I had the option of an apple or a banana. I always went to the banana because it was thinner. During a lesson about adjectives, my friend, an elementary school teacher, asked her class to describe their mothers. One boy described his mother's hair as auburn. Impressed by a sophisticated word choice, my friend asked, "How do you know his hair color is auburn?" His student replied, "Because that's what it says on the box." My boss arrived at work in a brand new Lamborghini, Wow, I said, that's an amazing car. He replied, if you work hard, put all of your hours in, and strive for excellence, I'll get another one next year. A patient came in from the hospital with a burned right hand. As the doctor took down his medical history, he asked the injured man, do you smoke? Yeah, a pack and a half a day, said the patient. Concerned, the doctor told him, you should consider quitting. No, it's okay, said the patient. I smoke with my left hand. Tough day on the job. Hundreds of Indian passengers were stuck aboard a train for 2 hours after the conductor abandoned his post. Turns out he was hot, so he went home to take a cold shower. In 2018, a mysterious power outage message in Lake Northworth, Florida, warned the public of a zombie alert. No one quite sure how the message was sent, but one local official had the dubious task of reassuring the citizenry. I want to reiterate that Lake Worth does not have any zombie activity currently. Currently? There's not a whole lot to relieve boredom when working in Antarctica. Books take on an added importance. Too much importance, evidently. A Russian electrical engineer was arrested for assaulting a co-worker. The reason behind his attack? His collab kept ruining the endings of the books he was reading. Okay, now we're going to do fascinating facts. And the picture in this introduction shows birds, what looks like an ocelot, some kind of a weird-looking creature in water, a toad, and a lizard, and it looks like a caterpillar or something. Every species has its peculiarities, but some creatures are weirder than others. In the name of self-preservation, mating, and even lunch, many animals have developed some curious, make that horrifying, habits. The female praying mantis is biting the head off her lover is among the most extreme. But there are plenty of creatures that have pushed the envelope of good taste in less murderous ways. Let's check out a menagerie that's so gross, other beasts might shake their heads and declare, that's disgusting. The hairy frog. If you learned of a frog that was constantly breaking its bones, you'd probably think, wow, that's one careless amphibian. But the 4-inch hairy frog of Western Africa knows what it's doing. When threatened, it can contract muscles that are connected to its hind claws, breaking the bones. The frogs then thrust the shards through the underside of its toe pads, turning them into weapons. When the foe has been vanquished, the bones retreat back into the foot, where it's believed the tissue around the horny claws eventually regenerates. Superhero fans may recognize this move. After all, the creature's nom de guerre is the Wolverine frog. The Eurasian roller bird. Imagine you saw some people whom you wanted to say hello to, but as you approached, they opened their mouths and vomited on you. You would give them a wide berth, right? In the case of young Eurasian roller birds, they have a good reason for this rude behavior. They assumed you were going to eat them. Rollers have been known to travel from Europe to Central Asia, and along the way they encounter countless of snakes, rats, and other predators. When the young birds hurl their orange, putrid-smelling intestinal fluid, it keeps the bad guys at bay and alerts their parents to potential trouble. The horned lizard. The horned lizard, found wandering drier climates from Arizona to Guatemala, is a tasty morsel. The morsel in question, however, has a neat trick to fend off hawks, snakes, canines, and other hunters. It shoots blood from ducks in the corners of its eyes into the eyes and mouths of sun predators, allowing the lizard to make a hasty retreat. The blood can travel up to 4 feet and is thought to contain a substance that is unpleasant for dogs and coyotes. Sea cucumbers. The sea cucumber's sloth-like speed should make it easy prey, but this bottom feeder possesses a secret weapon. When under threat by, say, a crab, some sea cucumber species shout out their guts, their intestines and respiratory tracts, and even their reproductive organs from their anuses. Believe it or not, certain predators find this appetizing. As they dig in, the sea cucumber hides under a rock or in the sand and plots its escape. Going on with life after you've literally spilled your guts isn't easy, and afterward the sea cucumber finds itself in kind of a suspended animation for a few months, regenerating its organs and getting ready to escape the next unsuspecting critter. The bombardier beetle. This creature gets its name honestly. It fends off attackers by bombing them with chemicals hot enough to burn human skin. The flying half-inch beetle has two separate glands. One contains hydrogen peroxide and hydroquinone, which can which can be engineered in a lab and used commercially as a skin bleaching agent. The other harbors a mixture of enzymes. When the contents of the two glands are mixed, they create a chemical that can reach a temperature of 212 degrees Fahrenheit. This combination is then shot out from a remarkably accurate nozzle-like opening located in the rear of the beetle's abdomen, an action that can repeat up to 20 times in a row before running out of ammunition. The Xenomorph Wasp. Remember the film Alien? The title character, a xenomorph, injects its embryo into the body of an astronaut. A few days later, bam, a baby alien pops out of the poor guy's chest. Well, about a year ago, a researcher in Australia discovered a wasp that injects its eggs into the victim, such as a moth caterpillar. As the eggs grow, they consume the caterpillar's inside until they burst until they burst out of its body as fully formed larvae. It doesn't end there. Sometimes the caterpillar survives in a zombie-like state, doomed to live out its life, protecting the new communal cocoon until the day the larvae emerges as wasp. The researcher, obviously a sci-fi fan, dubbed the wasp Delogenic Xenomorph. Think of it as another sequel to the Alien canon. And the honey badger. 30-pound honey badger has been dubbed the most fearless animal in the world for its willingness to take on larger beasts such as lions and buffalo. Aside from incredibly powerful jaw and a thick, rubbery skin, the honey badger defends itself by turning the pouch in its rear end inside out to spray enemies with a musky, suffocating stench. This action sent predators fleeing, which is actually what you would do if someone you just met pulled the same stunt. Here's another factoid. The honey badger usually lives alone. Gee, I wonder why. Family. The vanishing middle child. They're the empathetic ones, the natural-born mediators. What might their dwindling numbers mean for the rest of us? I don't need to ask you what you did August 12th. You no doubt attended your local Middle Child Day parade and took in a lecture on the famous middle children throughout history, then came home and cracked open a bottle of middle sister wine to celebrate. It's a real product created for the middle sisters everywhere. Or maybe you spent National Middle Child Day contemplating the extension of the middle child, because, like the mountain gorilla and the hawk-billed turtle, the American middle child is now an endangered species. Blame millennials, who are waiting longer to get married and have children. According to a study by the Pew Research Center in 1976, 65% of mothers between the ages of 40 and 44 had three or more children. Today, nearly two-thirds of women and children have only one or two. Middle children, the most popular birth order demographic throughout most of history, will soon be the tiniest. As a middle child, I am dismayed at the potential disappearance of my ilk. I'm the middle of three, two boys, one girl, so I'm what's sometimes referred to as the classic middle, as opposed to, say, the five middle kids between the oldest and the youngest in a family of seven. Being a middle child is not something you aspire to. It's something that happens to you. As one middle child said to me, there's a thing called a middle child syndrome. There's no official oldest child syndrome or youngest child syndrome. We're the only ones with a real syndrome. I certainly was always aware that the middle was not a position to be envied, even as I seemed to keep typical middle child traits in myself. Middle children are natural mediators. I avoid conflict and habitually act as the family peacemaker. Middle children tend to be private, but also starve for affection. I keep to myself, but am not exactly attention averse. Meanwhile, mostly what I learned as a middle child is that being the middle means being defined by what you are not. You're shaped primarily by what you missed out on and what you don't possess. According to studies, middle traditionally receive less financial and emotional support from their parents. They also typically have less intimate relationships with their mothers and fathers compared with other siblings, so they tend to have more friends, presumably in compensation. The list of famous middle children include figures diverse as Warren Buffett and Jennifer Lopez, but for the most part, middles are reliably cast in the culture as oddballs, outcasts, and misfits. On TV family sitcoms, the middle child is the misunderstood smart aleck. Whether it's Lisa Simpson, The Simpsons, or Alex Dunphy, Modern Family, then there are Peter and Jan Brady of the Brady Bunch, the middles of their representative gender choicus. poor Jan, sandwiched between perfect Marcia and adorable Cindy, became pop culture's most enduring embodiment of the middle child, a character so epically persecuted by her birth order status that her cry-day middledom, Marcia, 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 could be the Latin motto emblazoned above the family crest of middle children. In a study conducted by the City College of New York, in which participants were asked to choose words they associate with first, last, and middle kids, positive attributes such as caring and ambitious were cited in reference to all three birth orders. Only middies, however, were described with such negative terms as overlooked and confused. More significantly, middies were the only birth order to which no one applied the term spoiled. Middles were maybe many things, but they are not overindulged. The true evidence, though, comes from the middies themselves. Candace, the middle of seven, told me, "Nobody took baby pictures of me," which I didn't realize until I was in my 40s and asked for them. That was strange, awful discovery. And Bruce Hauptmann, the founder of the International Middle Child Union and a classic middle child, pointed out to me, Abel, Adam and Eve's middle son on the brother to Cain and Seth, was both history's first middle child and history's first murder victim. It's possible, of course, that the entire theory of birth order attribution is overblown. Many psychologists discount it altogether. While older kids may grow up to be CEOs, they disproportionately do, and younger kids may grow up to be comedians, they disproportionately do that too. People tend to recognize and agree with personality traits that seem to be tailored specifically for them, even when they're general enough to apply to a large group. If you're told that, say, redheads are nice but are occasionally stubborn, you'll agree if you're a redhead, even though that can really describe anyone. The best counter-argument in favor of birth order's importance is that it helps explain, along with genetics, why siblings can be so different from one another. After all, siblings are generally exposed to the same developmental conditions, whether parental, geographic, or economic. The only obvious variance in siblings are gender and birth order. Donald Trump is a middle child. He's the fourth of five children and the second-born son. And while he shares the middle child proclivity for negotiation, here's the catch. Trump, a CEO and now president, roles we might expect to fill by an eldest child, is what referred to by psychologists as a functionally firstborn, meaning the particular circumstances of his family may have shaped him like a firstborn son. In his case, Trump's older brother died prematurely from alcoholism. In such situations, some psychologists post, the second-born son assumes the middle mantle of the first, stacking up to seek the parental approval that was initially denied. Here's some famous middle children as well. Warren Buffett, Jennifer Lopez, Donald Trump, Bill Gates, Jennifer Garner, and Nelson Mandela. Birth order theory suggests that because they aren't burdened by excessive expectations like the firstborn, nor excessive attention like the lastborn, middleborns are uniquely posed to succeed. They are skilled diplomats by virtue of being stuck between two siblings. They're portrayed as loyal, romantic partners and friends because they're both hungry for intimate bonds and willing to compromise to maintain relationships. And they're believed to be natural innovators, since they're less likely to feel the weight of parental expectations. Bill Gates is the middle child of a prominent lawyer. His older sister, Christiane, grew up to become an accountant. What few people realize is that middle children are actually more likely to affect change in the world successfully than any other birth order, says psychologist Catherine Salmon, a leading expert on the middle children. As is so often the case with middies, they're perennially underestimated. That's why, even though I'm a middle myself, my mourning for the disappearance of middles isn't selfish. I'm thinking instead of the world left behind, a world of fewer diplomats, a world without as many hardy types whose upbringing gives them a knack for empathy. Jennifer Garner, when asked about raising kids in Hollywood, once referred to her own essential middle-childness. I am the model middle child, she explained. I am patient. I like to take care of everyone. Being called nice is a compliment. It's not a boring way to describe me. Patient, caring, nice, even boring. Doesn't it feel like those are qualities we need more of right now? These qualities, of course, won't disappear entirely. But as families continue to shrink and the number of middle children dwindles, there's a real reason to fear, because the irony is that strengths associated with middle children come not from parental nurturing, but from parental inattention. That means these virtues are especially difficult to cultivate in other kids. The secret power of middies, says Salmon, points the way from the notion that successful parenting is all almost about time and attention. And advocating for middles, Salmon is also promoting the idea that today's culture of overparenting is actually hindering the development of classic middle child merits in all children, because middies are forged in benign neglect. It's hard to imagine a world without so many of the middle children we know. There's a Nelson Mandela and a Susan B. Anthony and a David Letterman and Charles Darwin and Charlotte and Emily Bronte and Martin Luther King Jr. You can no doubt make lists of firstborns and lastborns and only children whom it would be just as hard to imagine the world without. But we've never had a problem celebrating the Marshes and the Cindys. Maybe it's time for Jan to have her day. Pulling the fun fungi. In Lithuania, getting lost while picking mushroom happens often enough to have its home word. Nugrebutel. And with that, let's switch over to Consumer Reports. Guessing games and counting trucks along with my handheld cassette player. Remember those? Stopping to stretch our legs and put gas in the car. Eagerly asking the inevitable questions. Are we there yet? Road trips have been a family tradition for generations. But soon, sooner than we think, many of us will be stopping to plug in, not gas up. U.S. sales of electric vehicles, EVs, have seen explosive growth in recent years, from fewer than 2,000 in 2010 to more than 230,000 in 2018. Innovative technology and lower prices have enhanced their appeal. While the fact that these vehicles reduce harmful emissions, benefit the environment and public health, have made them all the more attractive. Though still a niche market, EVs are cruising their way towards becoming mainstream. That's why we've been keeping such close tabs on them, tracking the distance they can travel on a single charge, as well as the rising availability of charging stations nationwide. If you're considering making the switch to charging instead of gassing up, be sure to consult our ratings. This month, we take a close look at the latest fleet of EVs and score the cars on their handling, comfort, and safety features. Plus, we preview more models coming soon. Gas-free cars made indeed be our destination. Are we there yet? No, not quite. But as the auto industry continues to rapidly consider its rapid evolution into exciting new arenas like electric vehicles and autonomous technologies, you can count on CR to keep giving you trustworthy insights so that you can decide which ride will suit you and the planet best for your journey ahead. That's from Marta Tellado, the president and CEO. Building a better world, driving digital security. Today's marketplace offers an ever-growing list of connected products, smartphones, smart TVs, smart refrigerators, even smart sneakers. Plus, we have millions of apps and other digital tools at our fingertips. And most of our daily users have huge online platforms like Amazon and Google. Spark technology delivers many conveniences, but also raises serious questions about the safety of our personal information and the way it's collected, shared, and exploited. Meanwhile, companies often fail to police themselves, and the federal government has not always kept pace with new technology. How CR has your back. To tackle these problems, we've launched the CR Digital Lab, a new initiative that will expand our work on consumer privacy and digital security. Funded in part by a $6 million investment from Craig Newmark Philanthropies, the Digital Lab will build on CR's core strengths, produce testing, investigative journalism, and advocacy. The aim is to develop new ways to test and report on digital products and services, from connected thermostats to cars that collect data on drivers to the websites of tech companies, big and small. Consumer Reports has a strong track record from ensuring the security of seatbelts in cars to keeping toxins out of food, says Newmark, founder of Craigslist and a former CR board member. This initiative will increase transparencies, giving consumers more control, more options, and a stronger voices. A previous investment by Newmark helped CR lead the development of the digital standard, a set of benchmarks companies use to design digital products that respect consumers' privacy. In 2018, CR applied the digital standard to our television testing, discovering that certain smart TVs were vulnerable to hacking. Smart work is planned or underway with routers, password managers, and other devices and services. The Digital Lab will reveal precisely where our rights are being undermined, says CR President Marta Tellado. Armed with that knowledge, consumers can make choices that protect their privacy and hold digital giants to account. Fighting the robocallers. What's at stake? Consumers are so fed up with robocalls that most have stopped answering their phones if they can't identify the caller in advance. Robocalls aren't just annoying, either. Truecaller estimates that consumers have lost almost $10.5 billion to phone scams over the previous 12 months. HowCR has your back. In April, CR hosted a roundtable session at the U.S. Capitol on ways that Congress could curtail unwanted robocalls. The next month, the Senate approved 97-1 the CR-endorsed Telephone Robocall Abuse Criminal Enforcement Act and Deterrence Act. It would enable the Federal Communications Commission to crack down on scammers and require phone companies to adopt technologies that verify caller ID data before the calls reach consumers. CR has been working with the House on taking similar action and urging President Trump to support the effort. Meanwhile, the FCC established that phone companies may permanently block robocalls as long as consumers can opt out. What you can do, go to robocallpetition.cr.org and join the more than 215,000 consumers urging the FCC to ensure carriers adopt effective free anti-robocall technologies. Pushing for safer furniture. What's at stake? A TV appliance or piece of furniture tips over and kills a child in the U.S. once every 2 weeks on the average. Dresses are particularly deadly, yet both furniture industry and the federal government have been slow to take steps that address the problem. Two recent events, however, are likely to make these tragedies less common. One is the passage by the New York State Legislature of Harper's Law, named after three-year-old Harper Freed of Monroe, New York, who died from a furniture trip-over incident. We expect Governor Andrew Cuomo to sign it into law. In addition, following the May meeting of the ASTM Furniture Safety Subcommittee, on which CR sits, along with parents, industry representatives, and other safety advocates, the group is now willing to extend a key voluntary standard to dressers short as 27 inches. How CR has your back. CR with New York legislator and the Freed family to ensure that Harper Law would restrict sales of dressers that fail to meet baseline stability standards. While CR's New York members sent 2,600 messages of support to their state lawmakers. CR also spent months urging the industry to strengthen its voluntary standard, to particularly by expanding the scope dresses 27 inches and taller, a recommendation based on the findings of CR tip-over investigation published in the May 2018 issue of the magazine. And let's take a look at letters. Our July Protect Yourself from Hidden Fees encouraged readers to share stories of and outrage over unexpected charges on cable bills, airline tickets, and more. Ray, airline hidden fees. It could get worse. Imagine the fictitious following. Ladies and gentlemen, in the unlikely event of a loss of cabin pressurization, please insert your credit card in the slot to the top-down oxygen masks. Hidden fees make my blood boil. They're not really fees. The companies view them as revenue streams. I had a client years ago who explained why they do it thusly. Because they can. Your article on hidden fees was timely. I have had several recent experiences with them. A historical facility fee added to each ticket when purchasing a subscription to a regional theater. A $3 fee imposed by my credit union when I didn't access my savings account online for 6 months. A fee imposed on each ticket by the movie theater when ordering tickets online, added at checkout. So many people have been abused by these absurd fees. Hotel fees have really annoyed me. I was not being charged for use of the pool and towels, even though I never got wet. It's high time that utility compensation and phone dealers have full disclosure as to all charges one could expect when getting a service. There really has to be transparency in the billing system for just about everything consumers are asked to pay for. If Americans en masse refuse to pay these entire extra fees, then corporations might have to respond. I like the CR is fighting for transparency in addressing these fees, but in the end, we the consumers need to pay more attention to how we exploit it and spend our money. You state that the earlier you buy airline tickets, the better your chances of finding a good seat at no extra charge. Sorry, but those days are long gone. What might score a good seat is the price paid, or the class of service. But even then, there is no industry standard. The airline industry is charging for good seats up front, aisle, window, extra legroom, extra pitch. The only way to avoid them is to wait until online check-in, when a passenger can choose a seat free of charge. Some airlines hold back a percentage of seats for at least 24 hours prior to departure. Editor's note, as your boarding time approaches, some seats may open up because of cancellations or maybe because the airline was holding seats that they tend to charge for. So yes, always check the seat map at check-in. But if you purchased a cheaper basic economy fare, it's very unlikely that you can upgrade to, say, a window seat free of charge by doing so. The article about avoiding unnecessary fees in car buy was especially relevant as I am planning on buying a new car. What I encountered at 3 out of 4 dealers was that the add-ons, vehicle identification number, etching, window tinting, and more, were not options. They were already on every car in their lot. One dealer told me that they were added because without them, dealers didn't have much profit in selling the cars these days. Editor's note, that's certainly frustrating. You shouldn't have to pay extra for things you don't need. Don't be afraid to ask for a fresh car without those extras installed. Walking away is always an option, too. More quick tips. Your article, What's Wrong with This Picture, about a tick bite prevention, was very informative. But I'd like to offer some tips. It may take a tick some time before it bites, so rolling a lint roller over your clothing, as well as any exposed skin, may help pick up ticks still crawling on you. Wear light-colored clothes. Ticks are dark, so lighter colors will show them better. If you have a tick, remove it and save it. Place the tick in a freezer bag and put it in the freezer. Chances are it will still be alive upon removal. Saving the tip will help your doctor determine what kind of tick it is and whether they may have passed the disease on to you. In Texas, also not so desirable, fire ant has reduced the population significantly. Fire ants have a painful sting but apparently don't carry diseases like the tick. Anyone in Texas would probably send some fire ants to anyone who wants them. Editor's note, fire ants do prey on ticks, but the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports that tick-borne diseases are on the rise nationwide, even in Texas. Also, some people may have potentially life-threatening allergic reaction to fire ant stings, according to the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. So a good tick repellent is still your best bet. You did not include tick-borne relapsing fever. I know someone who nearly died from this, having been unknowingly bitten by a tick while on vacation in Oregon. Because of his flu-like symptoms, he waited about 5 days before going to the doctor. He spent 4 weeks in the intensive care unit and 2 more weeks in the hospital before going home to slowly recuperate. Editor's note, we're sorry to hear about this experience. Tick-borne relapsing fever can be very serious, but it's also rare. For more information, go to cdc.gov/relapsingfever. Sunscreen smarts. As a dermatologist who has been involved with sunscreen testing, is your sunscreen safe, July? I found your articles the best source of information about effectiveness and cost, and I always pass them along to my patients and students. Since I spend a lot of time outdoors, I was happy to read your feature on sunscreens. However, your ratings include no information on fragrances. I can only use products that are fragrance-free, or nearly so, as I would love to find alternatives among your now tightly rated sunscreens. Our panel of trained sensory experts evaluates every sunscreen for scent and feel. All Access and digital members can find scent and feel information for all the sunscreens on our ratings at CR.org/sunscreens 0919. But here are three of CR's recommendation sunscreens that are fragrance-free or very lightly scented. La Roche-Posay Anathelis 60, Meldon Sunscreen, Milk, Copper Tone, Ultra Guard Lotion SPF 70, and Trader Joe's Spray SPF 50+. A mower demotion. Why are Cub cadets riding lawnmowers rated so poorly? This month, a cut above, when they were rated so highly last year. Editor's note, Cub cadet lawn tractors, which held a high rank in our lawnmower ratings in 2018, fell this year almost exclusively because of the brand's predicted reliability rating. Our reliability and satisfaction data, which were included in our scoring of mowers for the first time, 2019, are based on our survey which asked CR members about their experience with the more than 30,000 walk-behind mowers and 12,000 riding mowers. The article on lawnmowers leaves out the environmental cost of the American obsession with perfect expanses of green among their homes. Sure, finding a good buy on a lawnmower matters, but that singular focus precludes a wider view of the damage to water supplies, insects, and birds to the general household budget. A perfect lawn is essentially a green desert. Some lawn care products contain nitrogen and phosphorus that pollute surface streams, rivers, and more. Consumers should minimize their lawn care to an area that they actually use and tolerate dandelions. CR's mission as a change agent, as a protector of consumers, should be extended to make environmental consequences a constant. Key fob thefts. Unlock the power of your car's key fob in the July 2019 issue. Did not mention that car thieves love these devices because the crooks can store your signals when you use the device. Editor's note, that information isn't stored. The latest trend of key fob-related theft is done using a relay attack device, which is actually two devices working on tandem. One device captures the signal coming from the car key fob when the driver uses to lock his car or her vehicle. It then transmits that signal to a smaller device used to gain access to the vehicle. In many, but not all cases, it will also allow the vehicle to be started and driven away. Safe drinking water. What's in your bottled water? Cover some important information on arsenic in bottled water, but only briefly mentions the most effective way to avoid it. Stop buying bottled water. The vast majority of America's drinking water is safe. Ask our experts. I see foods labeled no artificial sweeteners, even though stevia is in the ingredients list. What gives? Stevia is 100 times sweeter than sugar and has no calories. It comes from a plant, so some consider it a natural rather than an artificial sweetener. Aspartame and sucralose, by contrast, are wholly cooked up in a lab. However, to make stevia, sweet-testing compounds called stevioglycerides are extracted from the plant leaves and purified. The Food and Drug Administration doesn't allow leaves themselves to be used in food. This can be done with water or alcohol, but sometimes the extracts are modified with enzymes. In addition, the glycosides can also be made using yeast that has been genetically engineered. Not only does the Food and Drug Administration not regulate the term no artificial sweeteners, but the term natural also lacks any regulatory definition. So manufacturers can use the claim as well. The Charlotte Vallier's MS, Senior Policy Analyst for Food and Nutrition at CR, the starting material for stevia extracts may be natural, but those ingredients are highly processed. Also known for evidence that stevia aids in weight loss or lowering blood sugar levels is very limited. I opened a 529 college account for my son. What do I need to know before withdrawing from it? Good move. Contributing money to a 529 account is the best way to save for college because the tax benefits you get. But withdrawals, the money doesn't so straightforward, says Donna Rosato, a senior money editor at CR. If you're not careful and spend the funds on the wrong type of education expenses, you could get hit with a 10% penalty and owe taxes on gains in the account. Although you can use 529 money for a wide range of college costs, including tuitions, fees, books, and computers, there are some education-related expenses that don't qualify. Health insurance offered by the school, for example, is not covered. So check with your plan administrator before you start withdrawing. Also know that you must spend the money on expenses incurred in the same calendar year, not academic year. But you may not want to spend the money all at once. Rosato says, if you think you'll need to take federal loans later, spread out the 529 withdrawals. The amount of federal loans you can take out is capped each year. So if you need to borrow more than those limits, you may have to turn in less consumer-friendly private loans to cover the gap. I've heard conflicting advice about preserving laptop battery life. What shall I actually be doing? There is indeed a lot of misinformation floating around about how to keep your laptop battery working longer. That's because battery technology has improved rapidly and a lot of old stays in the circulation doesn't apply anymore to newer technologies, says Rich Pisco, head of electronic testing at CR. Gone are the days when it was important to let batteries drain completely, then charge them all the way back up to 100%. That's now unnecessary with newer lithium-ion batteries, which power practically every laptop and smartphone, Fisco says. For long-term battery health today, the best tactic is to avoid charging it all the way to 100% or letting it run down to zero, says Annette Adilio, who oversees our computer testing. Ideally, you'll want to keep your battery charged between 20 and 80%. Turning off your laptop every day isn't necessary either. It's fine to leave your computer in standby mode for a few days at a time, Adilio says. However, to keep it running smoothly, a full reboot every few days is still a good idea in order to receive updates and clear your RAM. And then we move to CR Insights, a Dutch oven cook-off in the know. Dutch ovens, also known as cocottes, I've never heard that term, are typically a thick-walled cast-iron pot with a dome-shaped lid used for braised meats, stews, sauces, and bread baking. For many chefs, the versatile pot has become synonymous with Le Creuset brand, which has been making them since 1925. Our tests show that a signature Dutch oven offers excellent cooking performance for browning meats and can transition into an oven top up to 550 degrees, the highest of the pans we tested. For a hefty price, Le Creuset also offers a lifetime warranty and a wide variety of appealing enamel colors. But a few other brands of Dutch ovens on the market, particularly Lodge, now offer similarly looking pots that promise comparable performance for less money. So our test engineers put 8 Dutch ovens through their paces, boiling water, browning meat, caramelizing scallops, simmering tomato sauce, and baking bread. Staffers weighed in on the moistness and tenderness of braised brisket and the taste and texture of bread. Though no model could knock the signature Le Creuset from the top spot in our ratings, the Lodge Dutch oven came the closest in overall performance with the strong, long loop handles and a larger 5-quart capacity. It even turned out better bread. But it doesn't simmer sauce or brown meat quite as well as Le Creuset, and the limited lifetime warranty isn't quite as generous. For less than a fifth of the price, however, the Lodge is a solid choice. And how do the Dutch ovens stack up? Good all-around browning, but only fair at brown. Good all-around, but only fair at browning. The Aisha curry-covered Dutch oven, and it scores about $70. The bargain for bread making, but first 1-year warranty. The Varimi Dutch oven for $45, and great at browning, but pricey. The Staub Creuset at $325. And by the way, the Le Creuset 5.5 quart is $340. The Lodge 6-quart is $60. Big difference. How to clean practically anything. And as we're getting to the end of grilling season, this is kind of important. It's smart to clean your grill after each use, but outdoor cooking season draws to a close in some states. It's also important to do a final deep clean before rolling it into storage. Tackling this choice now will keep your grill tip-top shape for next spring and help keep away the rodents and other pests that can be attracted to leftover food bits and grates. Put your grill on full heat for 10 to 15 minutes with the lid closed. Turn it off and wait till the grates are still warm but cool enough to touch. It's easier to clean gunk off warm grates. Simply scrub both sides with your grill brush, water, and dish soap. The firebox. Turn off the propane, then take out the flavorizer bars and wash them off. If you see crud in the small slits of the burner tubes, our testers say a toothpick is the perfect tool to de-gunk them. Then scrape the bottom of the firebox and use soapy water to scrape down the inside. The propane tank. Before storing the tank, it's smart to check the gas hose for leaks. Turn off the gas, then spritz soapy water on the hose and connectors to the sink. And any large bubbles indicate a leak and mean the hose should be replaced. Otherwise, turn it off and disconnect the tank for storage. Cover. If you're leaving a grill outside for cold season, make sure its cover is vetted so that condensation doesn't get trapped. A quicker clean. Some grills, such as the Three Embers, have a slide-out grease tray to make cleanup even easier. Simply remove the tray and wash it with soapy water. New safety tech for teens. Car crashes are the number one killer of U.S. teens. In fact, the fatal crash rate per year driven for 16 to 19-year-olds is nearly 3 times the rate for drivers aged 20 and older, according to the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Though speeding and alcohol play a role, Statistics show that seatbelt use is lowest among teen drivers. When restraint use was known, 2016 data shows that 47% of teen drivers killed were unrestrained at the time of their crashes. Several automakers already offer models with specific features that let parents set restrictions to provide means to monitor a teen driver's behavior, such as capping maximum speeds and limiting audio volume levels. But the latest development for Chevrolet takes a new approach. The manufacturer has introductory industry-first buckle-to-drive feature on the 2020 Colorado Traverse and Malibu. When the teen driver mode is activated, if the driver steps on the brake and tries to shift the gear without bucking her seatbelt, the car will not shift out of park for 20 seconds. The driver will also hear an audible alert, and a warning will appear in the instrument panel that reads, "Buckle seat back to shift. Seat belt to shift." This way, teens get a compelling reminder to clip it. Good idea. Best for $50 a lift bike helmets. These helmets are low price, but don't skimp on safety. All received excessive ratings on our things. The Geo Reicher for $50 got a high score. The Bell Draft for $40 got a high score. And the Swim Intercept Adult got a decent score. Snap Together Patio Tiles. These outdoor flooring products market themselves as an inexpensive, easy do-it-yourself way to upgrade your cement patio or porch into a chic-looking deck. The products we tested are indeed simple to install, says lead decking tester Jova Pacella. These interlocking one-square-foot tiles, sold in sets or a single, they have grooved edges, so all consumers need to do is line up the corresponding tabs and press down until the tabs click into place. The options we tested were pretty budget-friendly to cover a small area, say 144 square feet of patio. Using the IKEA tiles, for example, you'll spend a total of about $320. Though if you want a real wood tile, such as Architrack or Bare Decor, listed below, which we'll read, the same square footage will cost you substantially more, between $980 and $1,650. And the resistance, the Arcrack Swift Dude deck got high rankings, the Bare Decor Easy Floor Solid Teak got high rankings, and the IKEA Runnin in Dark Gray, which is an artificial surface, got a fairly good read. So far, after 1 year, IKEA's inexpensive plastic deck tiles have done the best overall in our initial test, though the teak tiles from Bare Decor offer good slip resistance. And with that, we have just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.